Welcome to the Daily Review with Brad Munson for Thursday. And hey, don't you be saying I never talk about anything that's hot right now, sort of, because I am now going into a full tilt rant about why I gave up on Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon about 40 minutes in. Look, I go on and on and on about this in a new blog over on thebradmunson.com, so if you're a glutton for punishment, go check that out. I'll just hit the high points here, but the key message is simple. From where I was sitting, it took less than 3/4 of an hour to show me that there is nothing new, innovative, or even remotely encouraging about Rebel Moon. It's just another Zack Snyder imitation of somebody else's work, served up yet again on lukewarm toast. This time, however, it's not George Romero or Frank Miller or DC Comics. It's an uncredited but undeniable knockoff of Star Wars. It's no secret that Snyder has made big money and built a reputation by churning out mediocre to just plain bad adaptations of other people's ideas for 20 friggin' years. With the possible exception of Sucker Punch, it's all been other people's IPs, Dawn of the Dead, 300, Watchmen, all those deadly dull DC movies. It's not that I hate adaptation from source material, but when it's out-and-out imitation, as with Frank Miller's or Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' work, panel-for-panel recreations of what they did, that's lazy and frankly dishonest. And then when you take other people's ideas and you start talking about them as if they're yours, as if you somehow have been cheated out of your honest vision of other people's ideas, we get out of here. This is exactly what has brought us here, to this pale imitation of the Star Wars franchise, except this time he hasn't even bothered to actually do it within the Star Wars franchise itself. He's just repeating all its worst aspects. And that's painfully obvious from Act 1, Scene 1. I'll be merciful. I'll skip over the turgid and absolutely unnecessary opening narration. I mean, go read the blog if you care about that. But even after that, in those first abominable 40 minutes, he lays on no less than half a dozen more tired Star Wars fixtures. A remote village of grubby agrarian peasants versus a cruel spacefaring colonial force that dress like Nazis. The nameless village is so much like Tatooine, it's almost painful to look at. The only real difference is one of degree. There are a few more people, and they're even grubbier than Luke's aunt and uncle. Meanwhile, the tailoring of the space Nazis actually isn't quite as sharp in Rebel Moon as it is in A New Hope, but the imitation ain't a form of flattery. Maybe it's the caps that ruin it. And that fur-lined collar on the lead bad guy couldn't look more Gestapo if he'd ordered it out of a mail-order catalog circa 1939. And let's pause for a moment to consider the actual absurdity of this whole interaction. You have a village of a few hundred at most, if that, being visited by a space Nazi battleship that is literally as big as a mountain. What do the space Nazis really need? Food? Based on the glimpsed size of that ship hovering overhead, their crew is orders of magnitude bigger than the population of this nameless village. And even if the Nazis took all the crops, it would feed the battleship's crew for, what, a couple of days? It really doesn't make much sense in any kind of strategic way. Now, if there'd been even a hint that this battleship is in trouble, that they're losing some kind of interstellar conflict and the supply lines are broken, and if they don't feed their crew like now, they're going to face starvation or mutiny. Yeah, no, that's a movie. It's just not this movie. Then there's the desert planet. Please, God, not another one. I mean, between Tatooine and Arrakis and the numerically designated planets of Alien, haven't we seen enough of these already, like forever? Also, why does every planet in the Star Wars universe, and in this bad Xerox, have only one environment? I mean, you've got your desert planet, you've got your swamp planet, your snow planet. No variation in climate, no multiple societies on the same world. Now, here on Earth, of course, we have a dozen different climatological reasons and hundreds of cultures with no visible sign of coming together environmentally or socially. So why are all the planets out there so unified? We have a word for that in fictional world building. We call it lazy. Then there's the recently matured orphan, foundling, with an inborn destiny already in place. I mean, you have to give Korra some credit, but please, the name Korra, has nobody on Zack Snyder's team ever played a video game? I mean, true, she steps up as the chosen one pretty damn quickly, as if she's been, you know, waiting in the wings for this since she was found by her kindly uncle. But no, she couldn't just be a smart, tough young person who rises to become a hero on her own merits. That's too much work. She has to be the chosen one, like Luke or Paul Muad'Dib or Jesus. I mean, they have special powers and special luck, so you don't have to worry about having an actual personality or any serious self-doubts. or even a logical plot that doesn't rely on coincidence or assumption. This was meant to be, man. Come on. And we're still in the first 40 minutes. We're just now meeting Jimmy, a charming, useless, all-too-humanoid robot who walks more like a persnickety human than a persnickety human would walk. A lovely voice, a former member of the royal retinue, fallen on hard times, who surrendered to fate, but has a timely change of heart and saves the chosen one at a key moment. It is beat for beat C-3PO from A New Hope, minus only the squeaky sidekick. And again, the name. Jimmy? Jimmy? Worst name since Avatar's Unobtainium. A placeholder they put there in the first draft of the script and never got around to changing. And don't forget the magic weapon inherited from the heroes of the past. This one sneaks in at the very end of this 40-minute clip, dredged up by the uncle that sent the chosen Korra on her way. A sci-fi pistol of some kind with cool filigree that has just been waiting for her all this time. Undoubtedly, it has some kind of mystical backstory and purpose of its own. We can only hope that it glows real pretty or makes a cool boom-boom sound when it's fired. Oh, and finally, the building of a ragtag rebel alliance that will soon bring down the Galactic Empire. Now, let's not even get into the deep, deep absurdity of a peasant uprising taking down a star-spanning techno-fascist invading force. This hasn't worked too well for indigenous populations on any continent you care to mention, ever, but it's a requirement of ripoffs like this. Come on, you're talking about a planet-bound bunch of farmers with no training or experience, armed with pitchforks and bludgeons, going against an apparently inexhaustible Imperial force who have flying warships, for God's sakes, and energy weapons that also apparently never run out of ammo. In any real conflict, it wouldn't even qualify as a bloodbath. It would be more like a blood splash. And yet we end this first chapter on the undisputed assertion of hope. A general in an army? We might stand a chance. Or not. Actually, almost certainly not. Unless there's magic or massive coincidences waiting in the wings, or, you know, destiny. And all that happens right up front where you can touch it in the first 40 minutes of a movie that still has almost 140 minutes to go in its short version. And that's only the first part of Zack Snyder's story. And though I stopped there, I know that plenty of other movies are invoked in the rest of the movie. Seven Samurai and plenty of others as she gathers her force and heads out, and still nothing important happens. So I'm out. I'm not going to finish it, and I really don't think you should either. I'm sure you have something better to do with your time. And judging by the numbers on Rotten Tomatoes and on Metacritic, I'm not alone, thank God. I mean, come on, I don't actually expect anything original from Zack Snyder, not anymore. But at least he could have the common decency to just stop. Give that money to a dozen other creative folks to make something new and something good. Okay, end of rant. Go about your business. But please, don't bother with Rebel Moon. And that's it for today's Daily Review. I'm here with something new every day, Monday through Friday, every damn week, so come on back whenever you can stand it. There are links to what we've been talking about in the show notes and in the accompanying blog on thebradmunson.com. Take a look, and please do all the normal stuff like rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or any podcatcher of your choice. Tell your friends, invite your mom, you know, spread the word, and let me know what you think. You can also follow me for more and different stuff on Instagram or Threads at TheBradMunson, and on my website, weirdly enough called TheBradMunson.com. So until next time, I'm Brad Munson, and that's The Daily Review.